Our connection this hour was made last month when Monroe County legislators passed the county budget. The $1.2 billion county spending plan included money for the arts, about 0.1% of the budget's total. The bulk of the money went to one entity, the Rochester Museum and Science Center, and another large chunk went to the RPO. The remaining dollars were unevenly divided among 18 other institutions, but that's just a slice of the art scene in the county, which includes more than 60 organizations. Rochester prides itself on being a city of the arts. In 2018, it was ranked number 17 on the National Center for Arts Research list of the top 40 most vibrant arts communities. So if Rochester is a city of the arts, why don't we fund the arts? That is the central question and the title of City's January cover story. In a deep dive on the state of local arts funding, City Editor David Andrietta and Arts Editor Rebecca Rafferty report that, quote, although dozens of organizations make up Rochester's arts and cultural scene, Monroe County legislators did what they have done for decades and allocated most of the largesse to a handful of stalwart groups, end quote. The formula and distribution process leaves smaller groups with nothing or scrounging for leftovers. Representatives for various organizations interviewed for the piece argue that for an art city of such caliber, there should be more public support for artists and their work and a distribution process that's less confusing and more equitable. This hour, we examine how county funds for the arts are allocated and what the advocates want to see changed. And we're compressed. We didn't count on a governor briefing, but we're always glad to take those. So let me welcome our guests in studio. All three of us wearing masks during this conversation. The editor of City, City Magazine, is David Andrietta. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us, Evan.
The life editor for City Magazine is Rebecca Rafferty. Welcome. Thanks for being here. And also with us, we'll get that all squared up here. And on the phone with us, Blue Cease is the executive director of the Rochester Contemporary Arts Center. Hi, Blue.
Hi, everyone.
Simeon Bannister, vice president of community programs at the Rochester Area Community Foundation. Simeon, welcome.
Good afternoon.
And Dawn Lipson, longtime patron of the arts, who is head of the Arts and Cultural Council of Greater Rochester. Also, we should mention, an honorary trustee of WXXI and a friend of WXXI. Dawn, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody.
Rebecca Rafferty, this was your idea, was it? So hold on a second. We'll make sure Rebecca's microphone is working here, because what we'll do is we're kind of getting back into the studio here. So before we get Rebecca here to explain, I'll let the editor, whose mic I know is working. Go ahead, David.
Explain how it came about.
Yeah, well, yeah. How did this subject come about here?
Well, Rebecca approached me about this idea, and the concept was, you know, this has been a slow boil, actually, this idea that the size of the pie for Monroe County, for arts funding in Monroe County, just isn't big enough, and it's distributed unequally. This has been going on for decades, as you mentioned in your intro and as the story points out, but it has really sort of reached an inflection point as of late, and this is what Rebecca was impressing upon me when she pitched this story, particularly with budgets having been decimated by the pandemic. The question was, you know, if arts groups aren't going to be funded now, well, then when? Arts groups across the board, large and small, have really been affected by this, the economic fallout of the pandemic. And the small ones are, in some cases, on the brink of insolvency.
Rebecca, I think we've got you now. So, can you say hello? Yeah, I'm still not hearing you. So I'm going to keep talking to David, and it's no offense to Rebecca, who we love. But David, for a city like this in this position, we can talk about a city, we can talk about county funding, which the piece breaks down. But I know you had critics right away who said, you can't talk about this now. Everybody's budget is crunched. If you're not the federal government, you got nowhere to go with funding. What do you say?
Sure. I mean, I think that's a legitimate criticism. I do. I don't think anyone is expecting miracles in a year of a pandemic, that somehow this decades-old, antiquated formula for funding the arts, particularly, again, we'll just talk about Monroe County, because that's where most of the funding comes from. And we can talk about what role the city ought to play. But in terms of the antiquated funding formula in Monroe County, no one is expecting it to change overnight, and particularly under these circumstances. The county executive, however, campaigned on arts and on redistributing the arts funding. He made a point of stopping by arts and cultural organizations, mm-hmm. befriending mm-hmm. them, wanting to understand their problems. And it's understandable, I think, to the extent that the budget necessarily didn't address that this year. What I think is a little disappointing to a lot of arts groups is that it just hasn't even been brought up during his administration. I get it. He has been busy. There's no question. This article is not meant to finger wag him or his administration, but it is intended to jumpstart a conversation that we think is important in our community.
How helpful was his administration in getting some answers for you on these questions?
It was not helpful. There's really no other way to put it. Emails were exchanged, text messages were exchanged, phone calls were made, and they just weren't interested. And frankly, that was a bit of a surprise to me. I've always found the county executive to be accessible. Again, I do understand that there's a bit of a time crunch now, and they're dealing with some weighty issues regarding the pandemic, but I was surprised that they didn't want to participate in this article.
Okay. Don Lipson, who has headed the Arts and Cultural Council of Greater Rochester, the frame here asks a hard question for a community that I think rightfully wants to be known as an arts city and an arts county and an arts region. I mean, Don, are we a city of the arts to you, Don?
Well, I think that given the pandemic and where we are now, it's a struggle to hold up that title. But I do think the pandemic is giving us an opportunity to really create a transparent system for funding down the road. I mean, it is clear that the fight against the pandemic is really pulling on all kinds of resources. But I also think now is the opportunity for us to take a look at the way we fund the arts. What do we want in our community? What is enhancing the quality of life in our community? And now is the time to create a system so as things get better and we start revving up the economy, we already have a good, solid, transparent system in place that we then can fund and we can move forward with. I think that it is a terrible mistake not to seize this opportunity to change things for the better. I think that we have a lot of potential here, and I think that's being ignored.
Yeah, and so what I'm going to do, because we want to make sure we hear from Rebecca, we're going to have Rebecca come over and steal Dave's mic. No, I'm sorry. That is the host's fault. I think we can hear you now. Can you hear me now?
Hello?
I can't hear you.
I can hear you.
I can hear you there.
You can hear me here. All right.
Hey, Rebecca Rafferty. So I'm going to ask you to both stay, but I do want to ask you, you know, when the genesis for this came out, for this idea comes up here, what's the most important question you wanted to try to answer here with this, Rebecca?
Oh, my gosh. Well, just as Don was saying, transparency. It's been an issue for years. This is a story that I had been sort of tinkering with and pursuing for years, and as long as I've been writing about the arts in Rochester since 2008, it's been a concern for artists what kind of support they get, arts organizations as well, and just even finding out how to the process by which they can apply for the scraps that we're talking about has been opaque.
Okay, well, and as you answer here, grab that far mic, just bring it a little closer to you, put it right on your face there.
Got it.
Is covered by a mask. There you go. You know, Rebecca, in a second, I want to bring in Simeon and Blue and kind of explore how they see the decisions being made and who should be involved in some of these decisions. But how do you see this question? Because as we talked about before the program began, and as City has I think, helpfully tried to explain here, there are a lot of voices that have a lot of influence. There are a lot of artists who feel sort of ignored or left out. Who is kind of at the table here, and how do you see the question of how the funding breakdown sort of gets allocated and whether that is an antiquated process?
Well, as we explored in the article, the funding, who is behind it is actually, it's kind of opaque as well, who are making the decisions. So that's a question that a lot of people have, and a lot of artists and smaller arts organizations, particularly creatives of color, have had a criticism about being left out of decision-making processes. Anytime that we've had organized moments where the community is coming together to talk about arts funding, it's been a criticism and it's caused some contention among creatives that they don't really feel like they're invited to the table to make decisions.
Yeah, and David, as you look at how other communities are making these decisions, you know, in a sense, the criticism could be that it's too narrow, that it's too few people making the decisions. But in another sense, it could be that you need actual representatives from the community helping guide through the process. And when you look historically, as you've done now, a lot in the budgeting either hasn't changed or actually the budget's gotten smaller. And that, as Rebecca mentions, there's a lot of people who don't feel like their voices are heard. Is that another issue of transparency? I mean, do you feel like you understand how the decision-making process is working?
I do now. Fortunately, this question was actually asked of the Bellow administration during the Ways and Means Committee meeting that was a marathon, 7 hours, and it actually devoted about – they actually devoted
so
about
– So they didn't answer your calls, but you could dig through 7 hours
but
of
I, But I could watch 7 hours of video, yeah. which I ended up doing. The way it was explained – and the question was, how is the arts funding allocated? And the way it was explained was simply that the budget director, Bob Franklin of Monroe County, has a list of criteria. Groups are welcome to apply. He checks off the criteria. Among them are, you know, earned revenues and expenses. He basically takes a look at their tax returns, tries to get a sense of their audience and that sort of thing. And he decides... somewhat arbitrarily, it sounds, who gets the money. I mean, what we have here is a system, some of the small arts groups will say, is that we have a two-tiered system of haves and have-nots. And you've got, on one end, some august institutions that include, and this is by no means finger-pointing, but these are the institutions that receive money every year, the George Eastman Museum, Geneva Theater Center, Memorial Art Gallery. We can sort of go down that list. We all know those organizations, and we all know how valuable they are. But we've got those august institutions with well-heeled patrons who get support in other ways, pitted against small arts groups that get nothing.
Yeah, and Blue
or don't know how to apply.
Sure.
I mean, that's been another issue.
Sure, and then don't feel heard. I mean, Blue, you wrote a letter to the county about this issue in December, and I want to quote from it now. Monroe County wouldn't fund MCC without input from diverse education professionals, nor would Monroe County fund law enforcement without input from sheriffs and legal experts. Admittedly, arts and culture are not life or death, but this important part of the local economy deserves meaningful support with greater involvement from professionals in the field. For too long, some organizations have been completely left out, end quote. If they called you tomorrow, Blue, and said you're right, you get to draw up the table. Who decides? Who's at the table, Blue?
Well, it's not that complicated. I mean, we would have a diverse panel of professionals from the field who would be involved with making the decisions and making the allocations. This is how it's done in other counties. I've been involved with a number of efforts to look at our peer counties, both, you know, in the region here, but also some other peer counties around the country that we as a community tend to benchmark with. And there are processes in place that can easily be replicated here. It's really not as complicated as it may sound. And I want to make one other point. There are a whole range of philanthropic efforts. There are a number of small family foundations here in our community that support WXXI and support ROCO and support a whole range of other arts organizations, and they actually run their own competitive grant making through transparent processes. They have a simple website that says this is how you apply, this is the date, and this is what's required. Mm-hmm. And we should at the very least be expecting that from county government granting out $1.4 million.
Well, you know, this reporting has brought some colorful people to mind, including the late James Brace from Jim Brace from Henrietta, former supervisor. He was a Republican county legislator. And as our friends at Citi point out here, Blue, Jim was very blunt about how, and I'm not saying he speaks for all Republicans or whatever, or even all sort of centrist government leaders, but he said back in 1976 it was time to take a real meat axe to arts and cultural groups. And dropped this quote, quote, "These people think they have a divine right to government money. The more government gives, the less these institutions will try to support themselves," end quote. I knew Jim pretty well. I didn't hear him say this, but boy, I can hear it echoing in my ears. And I know that there's still some pushback, particularly during a cash-strapped time like a pandemic. How do you feel about that mentality, Blue, that the more the government supports the arts, the less these institutions try to create, you know, sort of a landscape in which they're self-sustaining?
I think it's ridiculous. I think, you know, the arts should not be segregated out from other parts of our local economy. We like to celebrate the arts. Local government are a big part of celebrating the arts organizations when times are good, and we need to support that important part of our local economy and the vibrancy and the quality of life that the arts provide. We need to support that part of our community at all times, not just when it's convenient. And I really, honestly, I don't think that's a Republican-Democrat issue. Many of the other communities that we looked at in our benchmarking, they are running transparent, competitive grant making at the county level, and they're in Republican states and Republican cities. So I really don't think that's a red or blue issue.
Sure. Simeon Bannister, as Vice President of Community Programs at the Rochester Area Community Foundation, you know, your organization works sometimes with philanthropic dollars and tries to understand how money is allocated, whether it's equitably allocated, whether the right people are at the table, making sure that they have a chance at different streams of funding. How do you see this question that Citi brings in their January issue, Simeon, in terms of whether we're an art city and, frankly, whether more needs to be done and whether more people need to be involved with maybe getting access to some of that?
Yeah, I think Citi absolutely nailed it with respect to the fact that we are indeed an art city. I mean, we're three out of the last 6 years appearing on the top 40 most vibrant art cities in the country. So that's a critical dimension. Without sufficient support, we've already been able to achieve quite a bit. In a rare moment, I'm going to disagree slightly with my friend and colleague, Blue Cees. Arts actually is life and death. and for those of us that have, followed the instructions to stay in our homes and, reduce the time that we go out, many of us have consumed the arts. It's been the arts that have been our anchor and have helped us with even some of our mental health issues and enjoyed performances from local artists here. I remember at the outset of the pandemic spending some time on a wonderful presentation that that Rocco did. And my friend Rena Golden over at the Avenue Black Box Theaters produced some great material. So this sustains us, and it's an absolutely critical piece. I'll tell you this. The Community Foundation, we are annually distributing about $2 million, $1.9 million year-to-date so far. We've got another grant round that's coming up in the next couple of months here for an additional $200,000. That'll take us over $2 million of funding. And we do that in a number of different ways. Some of it is assisting, as Blue kind of alluded to, folks that have donor advised funds and charitable checking accounts with us to make their grants. We have an open process where we've worked with the Arts and Cultural Council, with Dawn and Blue to distribute dollars in the past. And then we also internally have done, as you alluded to, a lot of work with folks to produce, you know, research about the arts field and ask some questions about how we can distribute it more effectively. The point is that this can be done, and and we believe that the county is orienting itself towards doing so. I mean, we don't want to pay short shrift to the fact that it is a pandemic. It's really challenging times, but we're also looking forward to leaning in with them. Last thing I'll say, Evan, I know the governor cut us a little bit short today, but the last thing I'll say is that the thing that we are hoping emerges from this moment is that what we don't think will be helpful is a commission or an arts group. The article kind of refers to a lot of communities that have these kinds of commissions. We don't think a county commission and then a separate city commission and then a separate community, you know, focused advocacy organization is the most healthy way to do this, that we want to encourage folks to think collectively about how we come together to support the full spectrum of arts, and that we do that in an equitable way that focuses on folks that have been traditionally excluded from those kinds of resources.
Well, and I'm glad you bring that up. Where we go next is a great way we should direct the end of this conversation, because, they talked to Thomas Warfield. I mean, the great Thomas Warfield, who said, quote, "For a city of our size with so many artists, to not have something like a commission or a council, it just boggles the mind." I take Simeon's point that, you know, sort of different commissions at every sort of level of government You know, there's different ways to do this, and I understand the preference that Simeon is sharing here. But I also read that thinking, wait a second, Dawn Lipson, I thought we still have an Arts and Cultural Council, but I'm sort of aloof about this. I mean, is there still an Arts and Cultural Council that's functional, Dawn?
Well, Arts and Cultural Council went dormant on March 16th due to the pandemic. And part of the issue with the Arts and Cultural Council goes back to this funding, because the majority of the funding for Arts and Cultural Council came from its members, came from the artists and the organizations and the institutions. They paid membership dues, and that helped the Arts Council move forward. In this pandemic, they are fighting for survival, and there is no way that they have the funding to be able to support the Arts and Cultural Council. So given those circumstances and given the fallout from the pandemic, it is highly unlikely that the Arts Council would be able to revive itself. But that being said, I do believe that we do need a neutral party where you have representation from the county, from the city, from business, that it's supported from those organizations, that can help make recommendations, maybe review applications. I go back to something that Simeon referenced when the Arts and Cultural Council did their grants for capacity building grants. It was clearly outlined about what those grants were for, who could apply for those, and then the group that actually made the recommendations on who to get that were diverse. There were people from the from dance, from music, from theater, from the visual arts sector. And that neutral panel reviewed those applications and made the recommendations. I think we can do that on a level that includes the county, the city, it includes some business. I think that that is the best way to move forward, because I think that you can't delineate this is for city and this is for county. Mm-hmm. When you look at who goes to the RPO concerts, you're looking at not just people that live in the city, you're looking at a lot of suburban people. So I think just you can't really make that cut about this should be something supported by the city or this should be supported. It should be a county-wide whatever it is should help process this. And I think now is the time to start to create the mechanism, whatever that mechanism is going to be. And the good work that Rochester Area Community Foundation does, I think they have to be a voice at that table, however this gets created, because I think they have a definite insight into what the donors in our community can do. And I think because we don't have such an operation, I think we miss out on a lot of private support that could be coupled with the public support.
Well, and let me turn to Rebecca, because in our last minute here, Rebecca is the reason that this happened for City's January cover issue, which you ought to pick up now. What are the questions and issues that you're going to be following next that sort of stem from everything that we've just talked about here, Rebecca?
The questions that I'll be following next. I think that there are several areas that are ripe for revisiting this article, including what groups are stepping up to do advocacy. Rock Arts United is one of them that is creating several committees to ensure equity and transparency and needs of different artists and arts groups are seen. I think following up on this idea of property tax for the county.
Which is explored well in the piece. And by the way, I love the piece. Says if you think immediately you get laughed out of office for an art tax, there's some good context there to think about. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it was proposed and voters in Jersey City have approved it.
So there's a lot of pieces here. Maybe it starts with the county calling you back. That'd be cool.
Wouldn't that be something?
Hey, if they're listening, David and Rebecca would love to hear from you. To our friends at Monroe County. I also, we're being a little bit flipped, but I know it's a difficult time, and they have their eyes on a lot of very difficult challenges. But these are important questions. Thank you, Rebecca. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
David, this issue out now.
Out now. Pick it up. Anywhere you can always find City.
You can always find City. Pick it up now. And to our guests, Simeon Bannister, Dawn Lipson, Blue Seas, thanks for the time. Wish we had more time, but thanks for making it for us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
All right, everybody.
Thank you.
More connections coming up.